Good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Good morning. My name is Mark. I'm an emotional compulsive eater, 100 pounder, and a bunch of other stuff. To qualify, I came in this round to this time to Overeaters Anonymous at 387 pounds. And it took me 3 months to start an abstinence to. Or even admit I was a compulsive overeater, another 3 months to get a sponsor, at which point I lost about 130 pounds, 135, at which point I broke my abstinence, gained weight back, found new abstinence, and then maintained a body weight around 350 pounds. So there's a term for it. I forget what that term is, something like it's a but it's a kind of an state. It's a different type of abstinence. It's not the healthy body weight. I've been in the program this time around 7 years. I say this time around because I've been introduced a couple times to Overeaters Anonymous over the years. Never took. I didn't keep coming back. I am currently. Realizing just all three aspects, the tears. So that's now my experience, strength, and hope. Qualify, I am the middle child of three boys adopted, which does play a significance in my life. I had some emotion, both emotional, but some psychological difficulties growing up, which definitely caused problems. Being adopted, I did get to see nature versus nurture in action with my brothers. And I had a lot of social problems in school, which made me feel very isolated. That really defined my character, along with the genetics to a certain extent. And it was always in a very healthy fantasy life, daydreaming. All these played in effect, all these in combination, and the disease was born. Was I born a compulsive overeater? I don't know. Probably. I have been extremely picky with food. To the point that my earliest memory with food is I will only eat bread and water. I wouldn't have anything else. I eventually started drinking milk to the point that my family had to go from whole milk to low fat to non-fat because of how much I was drinking. And I would eat food that was salty or dry in order to be able to drink milk. I also, as I said, picky with food, so if it was healthy, I wouldn't eat it. If it looked weird, I wouldn't eat it. Texture and visual was extremely important. If a food touched a food I liked that I didn't, if there was a food I didn't like, touched a food I liked, it was contaminated to me. So I wouldn't eat it. I'd eat even less. I'd have to separate it. And I would wake up sometimes 2 in the morning as a child and be extremely from hunger pangs, which I would go down and I'd find food that I liked and I would eat it and then I'd be able to go back to sleep. I'm not going to mention the foods, but these are just the little habits. I also know that when I was alone, I would seek out little foods. I'd just try to shave off, things like things that my mom made, or in preparation. And I would have a little bit there to kind of hide what I was having, that way I wouldn't eat it all, but at the same time, I kind of took a little bit here and there. When I was preteen, I was at religious school and there was a discussion on parents who are divorced. I had no idea what that was. I'd never heard that word before. So all but two of us or three of us in the class raised their hands. So I went home and I'm like, why are my parents different than anyone else? So I asked them, why aren't you guys divorced? Shortly thereafter, a few months later, they ended up getting divorced and I thought it was my fault. And that started a whole other series of issues with my parents and my siblings, because living in two different places, my father living in an apartment that he didn't like, but my brothers and I didn't like, and my father unable to handle stress led to a lot of screaming matches, broken dishes, very violent, or at least a very angry home. And as I was having social problems, and both my brothers seemed better in social, I always felt weird. I felt ostracized. I felt like a pariah, even in my own home. And because of some of my learning disabilities, I was having problems with school, so that wasn't fun. And so sometimes it even got a little bit physical with my father, to points I would run out of the house. He would blame me for that. Everyone else over the years, and even then, said I did the best thing. So he would make it my fault, or make it seem like it was my fault. And that's kind of the how I grew up, that if I did something wrong, it was my fault, not the environment, not someone else's. And that it was because it wasn't his view of exactly how it should be. So that became part of my characteristics too, that when there's something wrong that happens, it's my fault. And if I hear criticism in any way, or unless I'm completely, in a learning situation where I'm learning something new, I kind of see that. And that could, right now, I interpret that with body movements and, people paying attention. If I'm having a conversation with someone, if I see their eyes, darting about, oh, they're not paying attention to me, I'm not that interesting, maybe I need to cut the conversation short, maybe, or so yeah, the only times I feel like I can talk sometimes is when I'm actually sharing, because I don't get interrupted, and I feel I can actually have my own voice. So a lot of this goes to self-confidence, which very low or non-existent. A lot of this goes to then how I see, obviously see myself, how I interact with others. I have the viewpoint that because I don't have a good view about myself, then anyone who would be with me would should also have that same viewpoint. And why would I ruin someone else's time or make it miserable for them? So I don't engage with others, or at least minimally. And luckily, there are groups, and even in OA, there's like a childhood trauma meeting, which I go to, and that has been a safe place to talk about some of the traumas that I experienced as a child, and how it relates to food. There's, every meeting I go to has a different focus, and they're all good. The one thing but I have to say that I have changed the way I'm thinking since I joined OA. It is definitely positive. I have a better view of myself. I'm able to say no, and I'm able to sometimes see what's not healthy for me, and I can step away from that and not worry about it. As long as, I know that following the steps, and it's not easy, and there's times when I don't, a lot of times I don't. And that even still relates to sometimes my dealing with food. The one time, I know I'm kind of going all over the place here, but going back, as I said, I was never really a great student, so I didn't know what school I was going to go to. I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I was trying to work. My first official job, meaning when I actually got paid for with, and giving money to the government in taxes, was at a movie theater. And there's a wonderful, easy carbohydrate there that can be very easily. And that became, in between movies, became the go-to substitute for how I felt. And I have both positive and, negative stories from there. Some are funny, some are just sad. But that's also where I developed a work ethic of, which was partly deal with my people pleasing, which I am also card carrying member. If I can help someone out, if I can be of service, then that's the way I can kind of be in a group, but not really be involved in the group. So that way I can still be on the fringe and feel like I'm connected, but at the same time gives me enough room not to really be fully involved. And so, yeah, service is one of the nine tools of recovery, which I'm really good at. There's other tools I'm not, and those you, and as my one of my trainers has always said, that you do the exercise that's hardest that you don't like because that's the one you need the most. So the tools of the recovery that I don't use or don't engage in often are probably the ones I need to do more, such as telephone calls or even literature sometimes. I came in here without really a plan of what I was going to say, so I know I'm going all over the place. So what happened with me was social. People recognized that I had social issues, so I joined a group when I was, after my parents separated. And I remember one particular group, this was all other teenagers, and we were asking what brings us joy in our life. And I remember I said food. And it was mentioned to me about Overeaters Anonymous when I was 15. And I was given the gray sheet. And it sounded nice. Oh, here's a group of people who talk about food. Oh, I knew I had food issues as being a picky eater and my only eating certain things. But I look at the gray sheet and I'm like, hell no, I'm not gonna eat this. This is like half the food on there is stuff I don't eat. So why would I, And so I immediately dismissed it. And that is one regret that I have, not joining then, because knowing how much recovery I could have had if I had joined then. A few years later, as you know, having that after I started working in my early 20s, I was gaining weight, as one would if all you do is sit around and eat, from that particular carbohydrate. And I saw a dietitian who encouraged me and asked me to go to a meeting, Overeaters Anonymous meeting. So I went. I don't remember a lot about that meeting, but I remember hearing one person share being Jesus, and that turned me off. I'm not into big religious. I have no problem with that, someone's higher power being Jesus. I have no problem with any religion. I just don't have, I'm not looking at something that's completely a religious based, especially Christian, or as I was raised in a different religion. And so, and afterwards, when I had said I was a newcomer, that person came up to me and once again talked to me about Jesus. So it kind of turned me off. What I didn't do was go to five other meetings, which was, that we encourage newcomers to do. And I know that if that had happened, I would have heard meetings that were, maybe it wasn't that. I should also mention that meeting ended on the Lord's Prayer. So that was, a big turn off for me. And so I thought, well, if there's that religion, maybe there's another meeting that was religious in a different way, maybe one I could at least be slightly comfortable with. But I never went. So that was, what, 20, 30, 20 years, 25 years later, before I actually joined Overeaters Anonymous. I always thought about it. I had that list, which back then you had to call in and they'd leave your address and they would mail it out to you. When I finally joined Overeaters Anonymous, it's because I knew I had saw my way to 387 and I felt I do not want to hit 400. That was to me too much. So I started working out and I was losing about 1 pound a week. I was started seeing a dietitian because my doctor heavily recommended that because he didn't want me to hit 400 or higher. My dietitian, after speaking with her, recommended a therapist who had some experience with 12-step programs and Overeaters Anonymous specifically, who then was able to answer some of my concerns after, several meetings, and I joined because of that. And I have not, even though like I said, I had broke my abstinence, I never stopped coming to meetings. I kept on coming. And that is one of the biggest things. Because I really do believe in the tradition, I think it's four. The only desire is to stop eating compulsively. That's the only requirement. And There's, it's also a place I know that if we're hurting and we tell someone else we're hurting, they will help us. They'll listen. Other people here will listen because we've all been there at some point. When you go on the list of like I've done and I've done with some others, on the list of all the things that, might make you a compulsive overeater, I think I checked off 11 of the 12. The only thing I just didn't eat out of the trash. Because to me, like I said, food was contaminated. If at the moment it touched something else, it was horrible. Food that was discolored, which is why I didn't eat a lot. I don't eat fruits and vegetables because sometimes they come in different colors, different shades. And to me, that's wrong. I wouldn't even eat potato chips that were different colors, that were maybe a little bit darker, maybe in the cooking process.
Four
Now,
minutes, Mark. Sorry, I forgot the other ones. 4 minutes now.
all right, thank you. And as for the timer, thanks. All right, so overall, my first abstinence was refraining from anything that's unhealthy, refraining from all my red light and trying to avoid my yellow light foods. So I made a list of all red light foods, yellow light foods. I cut out most, like I try to, and I took my abstinence from others. So I try to cut out sugar, try to cut out bread, try to, it was unsustainable for me because these are things, a lot of these things have been so part of my life. And to me, it was missing. And I was still working on a spiritual aspect of the program, which is something that's still the hardest for me. And I'll go into that in a moment. So my new abstinence was refraining from compulsive food behaviors. Simple. What I do is I've been working on a food plan, and that keeps getting adjusted depending on new information, depending on what my body is telling me. So talking with my dietitian, talking with my doctors, talking with my sponsor, talking with even my therapist, coming up with a new food plan, and that can always be adjusted, depending on what it is. Let's say, so right now there's things like, okay, I will keep certain things low. I will watch within a certain range on other items, and things of that nature. My food plan, I'm still the one I have right now, which I've been working on the last on and off the last 3 years, but right now I've really done a lot of work in the last few weeks, and it's just about done. I have to one more thing and then go over with my sponsor. And I see I'm about at 2 minutes. So, that's part of the food plan is like an action plan. It's,
Minutes.
thank you. What I do every day, when you go to school, you still have your whole schedule. But out of school, if you're not working, which right now I'm not, I've graduated. I went back to school, graduated after a hiatus. Sometimes I'm like, okay, meetings and my gym is kind of like what I do, but the rest is kind of up in the air. So if I don't have an action plan and I'm sitting at home, I can spend 3 or 4 hours at home and I realize I haven't done anything all day. But if I kind of come up with an idea of what I want to do during the day, it's action. That includes with the food plan, workout plan, all of these can be broken down. So spiritual, just to wrap up, with about a minute left. I always believed in a higher power. At least, I had two different religions growing up in my family. My mom's oldest sister was a nun in the Catholic Church. My grandmother would always go to church every morning. As I said, I grew up with a different religion, so I've been exposed to different religions, and my next door neighbors were Native American. I do believe there's a higher power. Do I believe it's an old guy with a beard? And no. All I know is that there's a lot more to the universe than I'm aware of that I can comprehend. And I have a higher power. You can call it a guardian angel, you can call it anything, but my higher power does talk to me. I just don't always listen or I'm unable to understand. And sometimes my higher power has to go through others. Sometimes it could be TV, it could be a post on an Instagram. It could be someone else's higher power they talk through, but it does come around. And sometimes I do hear it. I always like the kind of finishing up with the one thing is that man plans and God laughs. So yeah, it's when you stop planning, you just turn your life over. It actually things somehow always work better. Anyway, thanks for letting me share today.